There are basically two voices that you can listen to as you're making decisions in all types of situations. The question is, what voices are you listening to? Welcome to the Grow Time Business Devo, where we explore God's principles for living a high-performance life. My name is Kenneth Ott, and today we're going to be in 1 Kings 12. It's a simple message. I read this morning, and I thought it's just a simple reminder, but an important reminder for leaders. And so I'm going to read verses 1 through 16 in chapter 12. But I wanted to give you a little bit of context. The context here is Solomon, who was the wisest man that ever lived and wrote the Proverbs and did all these amazing things and built the temple and, you know, was the son of David. And he was a great man. He was really wise. He was really powerful. He was really interesting. There's a lot to model off of Solomon. There's a lot of business advice in Solomon's story. So Solomon's really interesting. He's one of my favorites, you know, along with some of these other kind of really great leaders. I would call them business leaders in the Bible. And so I've studied Solomon a lot from the standpoint of business. And I've modeled a lot of business based off of Solomon and how he did his business, because he actually was and still is the richest man to have ever lived. Okay? The most powerful and richest man to have ever lived. And so there's a lot of great things about Solomon, but here's what's interesting about Solomon. Later in his life, he fell away from God. This wise person ended up falling away from God. He actually came back at the end and gave advice to people about how he messed up. And that's really interesting and valuable. But the context here is Solomon falls away from God. And then God says, okay, you've got a son, his name is Rehoboam. And then you've got a servant named Jeroboam. He's like, I'm going to give your kingdom to Jeroboam. And just because you're the son of David, I'm going to let you keep one little small part of the kingdom. I'm going to give that to your son. That's Rehoboam. And so you have these two people, Rehoboam and Jeroboam. And so Solomon gets upset and he goes to try and kill Jeroboam, and Jeroboam runs away and is now living in Egypt. Okay, so Solomon then dies. And now Solomon's son, Rehoboam, by the way, these names are really confusing to get right. And I am certainly not a Bible scholar or a pastor. And so I may mix them up. You may get them confused. But one starts with an R and one starts with a J. All right. So the R is Solomon's son. That's Rehoboam. So Solomon dies. Rehoboam becomes king of this small portion of the kingdom, one tribe. And when Rehoboam becomes king, Jeroboam, who had been hiding out in Egypt because Solomon wanted to kill him with the rest of the kingdom, you know, now wants to reconcile things potentially with Rehoboam. And that's where this chapter, these verses lie, right there. And so I'm going to start reading at verse 1. And I'm just going to read through verse 16. I might skip a couple things, but you're going to see a very obvious interaction here that is a great reminder for leaders. And then I've got a couple things to kind of just bring it home. So it says, verse 12, and Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel had gone to Shechem to make him king. So it happened when Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, heard it, he was still in Egypt, for he had fled from the presence of King Solomon and had been dwelling in Egypt, that they sent and called him. Then Jeroboam and the whole assembly of Israel came and spoke to Rehoboam, saying, okay, so Jeroboam's coming back to Rehoboam with the whole assembly of Israel, right? And they're bigger. And Rehoboam has this small little sliver of the kingdom. So verse 4, they said, your father made our yoke heavy. Now therefore, lighten the burdensome service of your father and his heavy yoke, which he put on us, and we will serve you. So he said to them, depart for 3 days and then come back to me. And the people departed. Okay. Then King Rehoboam consulted the elders who stood before his father Solomon while he still lived. And he said, How do you advise me to answer these people? So Rehoboam asks the advisors to the wisest man that ever lived what they thought, which is really smart. You would think that those guys, the advisors to the smartest man that ever lived, would probably have the best advice. So they say to him, and they spoke to him saying, if you will be a servant to these people today and serve them and answer them and speak good words to them, then they will be your servants forever. But he rejected the advice which the elders had given him and then consulted the young men who had grown up with him, who stood before him. So he rejects these guys and then he goes back to his homies that he grew up with, who knows what type of people these are, right? Like clearly they aren't kings and they weren't advising kings, right? So like, doesn't sound smart right now. Verse 9, and he said to them, what advice do you give? How should we answer the people, this people who have spoken to me saying, lighten the yoke which your father put on us? Then the young men who had grown up with him spoke to him saying, thus you should speak to this people who has spoken to you saying, your father made our yoke heavy, but you make it lighter on us. Thus you shall say to them, my little finger shall be thicker than my father's waist. It's funny how these are fighting words back then. But that's not a good thing. You know, I'm going to be harder on you by, you know, 10 times, 20 times than my father was. And now, whereas my father put a heavy yoke on you, I will add to your yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scourges. Okay, so this is the advice of his friends. This is the king, right? And here's the thing here, like one of the takeaways here is, why would he do this? And what happens here is they're playing to his ego, right? Why would he want to do this? They're playing to his ego, and that is a dangerous thing in an immature leader. Verse 12, it says, so Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam the third day as the king had directed them. Then the king answered the people roughly and rejected the advice which the elders had given him. And he spoke to them according to the advice of the young men, saying, my father made your yoke heavy, but I will add to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scourges. So the king did not listen to the people. So this is Jeroboam. For the turn of events was from the Lord, that he might fulfill his word, which the Lord had spoken. So God had told Solomon that he was giving most of the kingdom to Jeroboam. And so this had to happen. All right. Now, when all Israel saw that the king did not listen to them, the people answered the king saying, what share have we in David? Why we have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. Now, to your own house, O David. So Israel departed in their tents, or to their tents. They revolted. This chapter is actually titled The Revolt Against Rehoboam. So it's an interesting little story, a little confusing with words, but here are a couple things to kind of take away here. If you're a leader, right? Or if you have ambitions to be a leader, this is really pertinent to you. This was a good reminder to me. And it may seem obvious, his mistake. But I feel like, because I coach a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of leaders, and I feel these things in myself, like I feel like it's maybe less obvious than it seems to us. I think we have these temptations daily to deal with situations in one of two ways. And so there are basically two voices that you can listen to as you're making decisions in all types of situations. The question is, what voices are you listening to? So the first thing I want to pull out here is the value of mentorship. I've talked before about how advisors and mentors and people that you can truly model are really important in business in being successful at anything, certainly in leadership. And when you look to model someone, you want to find someone who is truly excellent and truly admirable all the ways that you want to be, right? A lot of times people pick someone to model and they want to model, they like the results of one aspect of their life and they don't necessarily process the other aspects of their life that maybe they don't want, right? Like a lot of people model and want to become famous, like celebrities and those kind of things. But the truth is like most celebrities are miserable. Most celebrities like go bankrupt. A lot of them have mental issues because of the stress and all the other things having to do with that kind of industry. And then, you know, there are tragic stories about many celebrities, right? Committing suicide and all these kind of things. Yet a lot of people want to be that. And the point I'm making is like when you're looking to model somebody, you want to model someone who has all the results that you want, a balanced person. This is hard to find, but it is very, very important, very valuable. You want to seek out wise mentors. You want to seek out, it's the, one of the reasons why like we work with a lot of big companies. A lot of big companies have a board of directors. It's a way to create protections to get hopefully that board is wise and you get the wise advice of people who are older, more experienced and have different perspectives. Okay, so mentorship is really valuable and you must, I think it's so important if you're leading something, like if you've got people that are following you, like it's so important to have wise mentors, wise coaches. It's why I have three business coaches. And then I've got probably five or more truly excellent mentors in my life that I meet with that are older than me, that have done a lot of the things that I'd like to do in ways that I admire. And I listen to them. And I ask them questions and they can speak into my life. Same with my business coaches. If you're pursuing something, you need to, if you're leading people, you should have someone coaching you. You should have someone mentoring you. I would say it's imprudent and irresponsible to be leading people without wise advisors and mentors. So if you have those people, then you should take that in. Like I've talked before about how you need to, if you know, cut out anyone that there's gonna, like most of the people in your life are going to create doubt if you're pursuing something great because most people's belief is really low. Most people's belief about themselves is really low. And so that often creates doubt in leaders and anything you're trying to do. But you must have some voices that you truly trust, like that you've specifically chosen to have input into your life and give you and help keep you on the right path. Help give you perspective, help you in situations. Listen, when you're in a difficult situation, it's really hard to make a balanced decision. I see that over and over again in my own life. Like when, and there's this thing I've talked about before called the focusing illusion. The focusing illusion says that nothing is as important as it seems when you're focusing on it. So when you're focused on something, an emergency, a situation, whatever it is, you're giving it disproportionate weight in your life and you're not looking at it clearly. It's why you don't make decisions in the middle of crisis. It's why you step out of things before you step into it. And it's why outside mentorship can be so valuable. So mentors are valuable. I think that's one takeaway here. The second takeaway is beware of your peers. And you know, this is like almost like surprisingly unwise, right? By Rehoboam here. And by the way, like the end result of this was just like both people went their own ways and fought forever and there was just destruction and it was just not good for either one, right? Like beware of your peers. It is important to be really cautious about all the people that you hang out with, all the people that you spend time with. The saying that you're the average of the five people that you spend the most time with is truly accurate. I've found that to be so accurate over the years. So get yourself in the room with people that are truly better than you, right? So that you're the one bringing down the average, not the other way. But what I find is like so many people, I find this a lot in business, like in a lot in like, if people are trying to build a business, this happens to be the case. If people are trying to, I know a lot of people that are looking to pursue wealth. And what's funny is they will often listen to people that don't have businesses, that don't lead people and are not wealthy, right? Those are the people that they'll listen to. Like, why would you listen to someone who doesn't have the result that you're trying to achieve when you're trying to, like, in order to achieve something? It makes absolutely no sense. And it's what Rehoboam did here. He listened to people that are not kings, that don't have any responsibility, that don't necessarily have any wisdom, that don't have any experience on a topic that they have no experience about. And I think that's easier. That seems really obvious in the story, but I think it happens. I know it happens a lot with leaders, right? You're spending time with your friends. They have a certain perspective on something. They kind of skew your direction. Like, the other side of this is that your ego can be at play. And so if you're an immature leader, which we all are at some point, like it can be really dangerous, because one of the things that it seems to me that happened in this story was his friends played to his ego, right? Like, the wise thing was to be kind and, as it was said, serve these people and speak kind, good words to them. That was like, it seems to me, like knocked on his ego, right? He'd have to lower himself, or seemingly lower himself, which that's not actually what it would have been, in order to do that. But the other way shows his power, right? And he's able to flex on them. And that makes him feel good in the moment. And I think those people played to his ego. I think it's possible in our circles for our friends to play to our ego, or to play to things that they know will trigger you in various ways and make you make the wrong decision. The other side of the peers conversation is social media noise. Like, a lot, for a lot of people, like, it may not be their peers. It just may be all the noise, and I categorize that as noise, like all the stuff that you listen to on social media, right? Like, whether it be comparison envy, or like, it's essentially all comparison, right? And never positive results. And so for entrepreneurs, I see so many chasing various things, like I call it shiny object syndrome, where you're pivoting every time you see something, someone doing something that seems like a better way. And it's always changing, because you're always looking out at somebody else and never just staying focused on what you're supposed to be doing, never realizing that what they're showing you is probably not accurate. It's probably, you know, it's probably not genuine. It's probably not what they experience every day, even if that situation is genuine, and it's projected, right? And so we don't really ever kind of, like, a lot of people don't process that, but it's so important to watch those inputs, like your peers, the people around you, your friends, social media. All these things are not necessarily good inputs. They don't have the experience necessarily that you need. They're not in the position that you're in. They don't have the same calling and ambitions that you have. So you need to cut those out. Like, I believe in literally cutting those types of things. In my life, I cut those things out of my life. Like, anything that brings me down, I cut those things out of my life. I have the benefit of being very driven and also being somewhat introverted. So I don't really like hanging out with a lot of people unless I really care about them, which I do like hanging out with people that I care about. So for me, cutting all the garbage out of my life was not a big deal. For some people, it really is. Some people just love the energy of all their friends and the party and all that kind of stuff. It's going to be a little harder, but you must do it if you're going to be successful and lead in a responsible way. All right, so that's the second thing. Beware of your peers. The third thing is loyalty is really powerful. I think it's interesting here, and it's easy to miss, but it says in verse 7, If you will be a servant to these people today and serve them and answer them and speak good words to them, then they will be your servants forever. Like when you're building something, loyalty is everything. You know, if you were leading an army, right? The great generals, like, you know, that scene in Braveheart, you want people that will go to battle for you because you serve them and lead them so well that they trust you and that they would do anything for you. That is very valuable in building anything, a business, a church, an organization, whatever it is. If you can rally people and lead them in such a way where they will go to bat and go to battle and march into the heart of the beast for you, right? You just give them those marching orders and they're energized around it. And it's not just about you, but it's how you treat them. It's about the vision. It's about your excellence. It's about their respect for you. It's about their respect for your skill set and excellence. It's all these different things, right? And I've talked about those kind of things before. Go listen to the various devos. But there, when you have that, the loyalty component is so valuable. It's building an army of people who will go to battle for you because you've invested in them, because you cared about them. This is not being a doormat. This is not being afraid to call people to the mat and hold the standard high and have some fear. I did a whole podcast on the role of fear in leadership. It's interesting how it's so important when you break it down that there is an element of fear in leadership. Fear and loyalty go hand in hand when it's aligned, when it's in the right direction, when it's for the right reasons. So this is not being a doormat. This is not, I've coached a lot of people on this and, because some leaders who have a lot of empathy, you know, I don't know if you've done the DISC test, D-I-S-C, but it's a personality test, which I think you should do. We do it. We all do it. All our people do it. It's very helpful. If you have a high S and you're a leader, right? And you have that kind of like high feeling. For me, I actually don't have that and I have to work on that. But for some people, they do. And I've coached a lot of people in this. Sometimes they end up becoming the assistant to their people, right? Where like they're actually not leading them. It may seem like they're serving them, but they're actually not serving them because they're becoming subservient to them. That is not what this is saying. Like there needs to be a brave leader at the front with excellence that's respectable, that can call people on things, that has a certain amount of fear and that holds a standard and that marches forward and is not afraid of battling, that's courageous, and that serves the people in those ways. Like serving your people is less about being subservient to your people. That's not what it is. Serving them well is sometimes challenging them really hard, right? Sometimes like serving them well is making sure you're outpacing them with vision. Like it's actually very hard to serve them well. Over the years, I've gotten better and better at it, but it's actually quite challenging to serve them well because there's a lot of work that goes into leading well. I'm still learning, but I've learned a lot. And loyalty, though, is so powerful and so critical to the success of what you're doing. So if you're leading anyone, generating a team that will go to battle for you is so important. And we see Rehoboam just eliminate that and throw it to the wayside here, and it actually becomes his greatest problem, right? And so what are the results here? The results, there were two paths he could have gone down. The first one is he could have had a loyal, unified kingdom of just passionate people that were upset at his dad. And then he got them all back together, served them, united them, and he could have had a powerful kingdom. Instead, what he had is a revolt. So 90% of the kingdom went and followed Jeroboam, right? And they all revolted, they all left, and they all hated him for it. And they had conflict for the rest of their lives, right? And so that's where it ends. Like it actually says in, so verse 16, so Israel departed from departed to their tents. That's, they left and they revolted. I think what's interesting, it's a couple chapters later, I was just like kind of reading the story, verse 30 of chapter 14 says this, and there was war between Rehoboam and Jeroboam all their days. All their days. That one conversation, that one interaction, that one bad decision to listen to the wrong people created war for the rest of their lives. And not just their lives, but all the people that they led, their lives as well. It's so interesting how one conversation, one little turn of events, there was a fork in the road, right? And that one path, that one conversation led to war for the rest of their days. That's the result they got from having taking the advice of foolish people who he probably knew he shouldn't have been taking their advice to begin with. And Rehoboam and Jeroboam, turns out they didn't love God and they fell away and they did evil things. And so this is a way to rehash that apparently, you know, in God's world and bring his people through that. But that aside, they had war for the rest of their days. And so just to kind of wrap this up, I just want you to leave you with a couple things. Sometimes the wise advice, I'm taking this away from here, is not the easy advice, right? Sometimes the wise advice doesn't play to our ego. It may seem less exciting, right? Sometimes the wise thing is less exciting, but it's the smart path. And I think we have to, as leaders, because as leaders, like if you're leading something, you have a certain level of ego. Like there, it's inside of you. It's not a bad thing. It's bad if it gets out of hand. But you have desires, right? You have ambitions. You, as I say it, need to own your greatness. Owning your greatness is a very careful balance where you keep ego in check, but you also know who you are and whose you are, how you were made, and you own it. And so it's really easy for leaders to go egotistical. Like it's very easy. And so I think that's the danger for every ego, for every leader, is decisions that are not based on ego. I can think of so many times over the years of leading a business where I've gotten emails from people. I did this really dumb thing. Like when I was first starting in business, there was this older guy who was really being unkind to me verbally or over email with all these other people on their email, right? And I was actually doing something for free. I was actually donating my time to help something. And he was as well, but he was acting like a jerk. And so he's sending all his emails, berating everything with all these other people on it. And so the wise thing that I could have done, would have been to maybe not respond or respond in a wise way or be the bigger person. But instead, I responded and lashed out at him and just like tried to shred him apart in an email. And it was really bad. Like it created a lot of drama. But then it had a domino effect. I actually had been trying to work with this person in business, or I had been involved with this person in business in other ways. It soured that whole thing, right? It created a whole bunch of conflict. And I remember to this day, every time I get an email where someone's being unkind, I feel like they're being unjust or being a jerk or being a baby or whatever. And that happens like in our business, like we've seen people berating us. Like I have people, you know, making comments on ads that we run that are horrible comments, like just berating things, you know, just there's a lot of angry people out there. There's a lot of negativity out there and there's a lot of other situations out there. But I always remember this situation every time because it's gone away as I've gotten a little older, but it used to really trigger my ego. Like I used to feel like I got to go and smash this person down, like correct them and justify this thing or whatever. And that would have been the egotistical fun, maybe fun approach in the moment, certainly not fun long-term, but the unwise approach. And because I experienced it several times, I learned after a little while that that is not the wise approach. I've seen the benefits of the wise approach, of the bigger person approach, of, you know, not caring, you know, not feeding the ego, but being the smart person. If you can be the smart, wise person who doesn't, you know, get caught into those things, you'll be the much more successful person. That's what I've learned. And that's what I want. And it took me a long time to learn that, but hopefully you guys learned that, or maybe you know that already. So I just want to end with a question. Like, I wonder what Rehoboam's, I was just thinking, what would Rehoboam's life been like if he would have responded differently? And maybe you can think of ways that your life would be different if you, in a current situation, respond differently. This was like a fork in the road. His life would have been seemingly much better if he had unified the kingdom. It's much more powerful, much more successful, less conflict, all those kind of things. So I wonder if we should look at, it makes me care more about all the situations in my life that come up and maybe in yours. How can you choose to be the wiser person as you make these decisions or respond to people versus the egotistical side that may make you feel good in the moment, but then lead to conflict? Like, what are you giving up by doing that? He ended up as king of only a small piece, right? Small piece of the kingdom. And in war all his days until he died, where things could have been different. And so I hope this was a helpful reminder to us today to make some wise decisions, right? To take advice from wise mentors and wise coaches in leading people. And to maybe pause before you react to something, right? Pause, think about it, and maybe think about yourself in this situation and react in a way that would actually have given you the better path and not the way that Rehoboam reacted and led him down the path of destruction. And so I hope this helps you today. I hope this helps you live a high-performance life in a better way. For more information about the Business Devo or to get these in your inbox or text it to you, go to bizdevo.com. That's bizdevo.com. Or if you'd like to learn more about me, you can go to kenott.com. That's kenott.com. Thanks. And until next time, never stop growing.